cycle jerks.
Hey, get out of the road, dummy.
Cycle Jerks Podcast.
All right. How's everybody doing out there? Welcome to Cycle Jerks Podcast, episode 133. We got, we're going to be joined by Alex G from World Bicycle Relief a little bit later. But Dave and I are going to kick around a few topics before and give a shout out to our sponsors before Alex joins us. Dave, how you doing this morning?
Good, man. Two great rides this week.
Nice.
And trails are in pretty good shape despite the rain. I went up not quite to the Dirty Summit yesterday, but good stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
Nice. I have come to the realization, though, age is I need better gearing or easier gears.
Oh, man.
I need easier gears.
That's not exactly an easy.
I know.
Easy grind up there for sure.
Yep. I know.
Yeah.
But so I just realized that I'm just maniacally fixed that I used to be able to do it in this gear and I would keep pushing it, and my legs were just dying on the road on Saturday and on the yesterday. So I just threw up the white flag and said, all right, drop down a gear, you know, make it easier. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I always ride my easiest gear up that thing anyway.
Yeah, I don't. I was always pushing. I was always mashing.
I think so. I don't know. It's been a while since I've done it.
Yeah.
I've just been doing trainer life.
So I need to connect you with some mental health people. What is with you? You're just on this climbing portal. It's all you do. You can't. The weather's decent. You can get outside. What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I ride early, you know, I got to get up early. I don't know. I could have went on Saturday. I could have went outside. I almost did, but you know, I got back from Scottsdale and I don't even want to say it, but I either have a cold or I have allergies.
Oh no.
But
this has been plaguing you for months now.
I'm very concerned about my immune system in general. I don't know.
I think you're depressed that you had to sell the Buick.
Yeah. Oh, that was exciting. That was actually
congratulations, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Stel flew down there. She was down there with you too.
Yep. Yep. So, everybody. So I had this old 1960 Buick that I restored in 2006 and, I took it to the Bear Jackson auction and auctioned her off. It's a nerve-wracking process, but it was a lot of fun. We got a really good price for the car. So everybody's happy. And now I have an empty spot in my garage. get a bigger screen right for my Zwift. Yeah.
But that was 3 days of cars. There's that many people.
It's eight days.
8 days.
They auctioned off 2,000 cars in 8 days. It's incredible. They had cars that went for over $1 million.
No shit.
Yeah.
What went for $1 million? What kind of car went for $1 million?
Donald Trump's 2002 Lamborghini. So apparently he owned this car in 2002. It was like a mega shrine. When you went to the through this auditorium with all the cars and everything.
Yeah.
They had this big banner up there. It said Donald. There was no picture, thankfully. It just said Donald Trump's Lambo. And there was a bunch of MAGA hats and freedom flyers, you know, people just standing there staring at it. It was, you know, but anyway, it went for 1.1 million. And
Jesus.
It's wild. It's wild. They get big values, but there's also cars across the block where it's like, dang, that's cheap.
Yeah.
There's an MMA guy, Sugar Sean. He had a Tesla there, a Tesla Y, which is, you know, I think that's like an $80,000 car,
mm-hmm.
30,000 miles on it,
mm-hmm.
for 31 grand.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
So there are good deals there, and it's not just vintage cars. It's like I mentioned that, you know, Sugar Sean's car is brand new, but I'm sure he was pissed. That's the thing about it, is you just don't know how it's going to go. There's no reserve. So
what do you mean there's no reserve? What does that mean?
There's no reserve. So you can't set a price on it.
Oh.
So you go up there, it could sell for $300 or it could sell for 3 million.
And
whatever it sells for is what it sells for.
All right. So you can't, you're not there. So you can't necessarily say, nope, I'm not accepting that.
Well, you are there, but you don't have a choice of not accepting it. It is what it is.
Oh, so, that's why it's nerve wracking then.
Yeah. Yeah. And the day that my car went off, my car is a 60s mild custom, is what you'd call my car in that genre. So there were cars that went off that day that were in the 20s, in the 30s, 60s mild customs. And so I didn't know how it was going to go. I was getting a little nervous. I had to stop watching it.
Really?
I can't watch the values. I don't want to even get, you know, caught up in their cars and their values. I'm just going to, you know, and we had a lot of people that were I think there was probably 25 people that were bidding on my car. So,
the reality is, I think I've only seen it in pictures and in a quick glance in your garage. So I have no idea what kind of shape it's in, but it looked mint. So,
oh yeah, it was an incredible car. I got a good car to start with, and we just went nuts on it. So,
yeah,
it was in really great shape. It's, yeah, I don't want to go all braggy on it, but it has won multiple, like, award of excellence
right.
from Good Guys, and you know, it's won all kinds of awards and stuff. It's a good car. So now somebody else's.
You closed the chapter.
It's so weird. Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah.
But in a way, I'm, you know, on to the next, as they say. I don't know that I'm going to build another car, though. I don't see that happening.
Well, I mean, because you've made the transition from building cars to building houses. Now you're building one in your back.
Yeah. Yeah. And my painter's duds on yesterday.
Yeah, that was a great video.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I do want to mention, you know, so this show was started with, it was actually three of us, Bo Grant, myself, and Sean Remy. And, you know, people move on and do, you know, things change. And so now it's Dave and I running the show. But one of the founders, Bo, has fallen on some hard times. You know, Bo and I did that big European trip. And while we were over there, you know, his mother was in failing health. And I know that caused a lot of stress for him. And but since coming back, beyond dealing with his mom, he's also developed throat cancer. And it's pretty gnarly. He's gone through a bunch of radiation and cancer treatment, and he's been chronicling it all on Instagram. And thankfully, it looks like he's out of the woods. They'll know more in 3 months. But currently he's being fed through a tube in his stomach. I mean, it's been a brutal run for Bo, and we wish him well, obviously, at the podcast here. And you know, something else happened too coming back from Europe, where his Instagram got hacked. So if you were following him before and you're not getting his feed anymore, he's got a new Instagram, and it is BKG underscore 1970. So if you'd like to follow along with Bo, send him some well wishes. That's how you can reach out to him.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mike. I mean, he's an architect of of the cycle jerks, and but your trip aside, you've got a history there. You guys, I mean, I've only known him through the podcast, but you go back to when?
Oh yeah, I mean, all the way back to the 80s.
Yeah,
we were racing the early bird crits together.
Right,
you know?
Crazy.
Yeah. 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 So,
and, just I don't think how old is Bo?
Well, he's younger than I am, and since it is BKG 1970, I'm guessing that he's probably, I was born in 66, so he's probably like 54, maybe
Okay, yeah, that
53,
yeah.
53.
I bring that up only just because it just shows you how indiscriminate cancer is, right? I mean, and this is a guy that at least in the last couple of years that I don't know him prior to that, but it was leading a healthy lifestyle, right? He was dropping weight and riding the bike so that he could get ready to go to, so here's a fairly young dude with doing a lot of the right things and this fucking cancer, man, it's just so indiscriminate. It doesn't matter, the age, it doesn't matter what you're doing, healthy people, it just sucks. It just sucks. So healing
Well,
vibes, Bo, if you're listening. So
and
and
thankfully, the medical system, the way that it is, I mean, a lot of these cancers are able to correct, and get rid of, and hopefully that'll be the case for Bo.
yeah. Now, yeah. Nowadays, it's that's a good thing, right? So, all right, Bo, please, please, please take care of yourself, and we're thinking of you.
All right. Let's get into the sponsors, Dave. Talk to me.
Dara spoke to, well, our main lean athlete strength is the brainchild of our good friend and friend of the pod, Dara Richmond, who, by the way, is over. Or somewhere, maybe I shouldn't say it, but she seems like she's skiing in, over in Europe somewhere.
Yeah, life is
So
good.
that what a lifestyle. But yeah, so I think I told you I'm pretty stoked. I've got about, let me see, 7 more days of this 30-day yoga thing, and then I'm going on to her 6-week strength building program, and it's all body weight stuff. And again, most importantly, these are designed specifically for endurance athletes, runners, and cyclists. So this is why I'm pretty stoked about because there's no shortage of these programs out there on the internet that you can find, but these are designed. The Dara's a skier. I mean, skier. She's a runner. She's a cyclist. So I'm pretty stroked about getting on that. But she wanted me to tell our listeners that stay tuned because she's coming up with a 4-week program of strength and her nutrition all bundled together. And this one you'll be in a PDF. You don't actually have to have her app. She does have an app that you can get Lean Athlete Strength on, Apple and Android, but you won't need it for this one. So many thanks to Dara for supporting the pod and follow them, Lean Athlete Strength, on Instagram and Facebook, and check out her app. So there you go.
Right. Yeah, I'd still use some of her stretches as part of my regular routine. So
You know the
after I get off the bike.
it's interesting that's that you say that, because that's the one thing that I'm not sure I'm hooked up on this yoga thing. Like a lot of people do it. I'm not sure I'm hooked on it, but the stretching part of it, when she's starting to bend me into a pretzel, and I start to realize like I can't, it's hard for me to even just sit cross-legged on the floor and have my, I can do it, but there's pain in my hips, and then, so I think I'm gonna get, in addition to her, to Dara's strength thing, I think I'm gonna go back. I'm going to get more serious about stretching because, it's an accident waiting to happen, right? I'm so tense, and I know that one cold day I'll go and try to stand on my bike and start to go, and something's going to give. So, yeah,
Well, I
so
know I feel
cool.
like it does help with my recovery. That's if that makes any sense. But I just feel like I feel a lot looser after I get through with it. My quads are still sore, but like I do this calf stretch, it's really good. And in my yoga routine, I do the hips where you slide your leg up. And you kind of fold yourself over,
I know.
and it's
Yeah.
brutal.
And
It's very painful, but the hips are so tight. It really does open things up. So yeah.
Yeah, and what
We
yeah,
sound like
what
a
is
couple old guys here. Remember,
well we are.
youngsters, you need to stretch, youngsters.
Start
Stretch.
early. Start
Yeah.
early. 'Cause this is all it is what this
It's
is habit,
accumulation.
right?
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
accumulation.
but right. But the remedy is habit, right? And you just have
Yep.
to start doing it at a specific time.
Yeah,
But
but
I
I
know,
remember, yeah,
go
as a
ahead.
young person, people would tell you to stretch. You'd be like, yeah,
Yeah,
whatever. You know, right.
right. But if you think about it, like one of the things that's pointed out to me, like by the end of the night, or when I do my yoga, I usually do it like around 5:30, right? And one of the things, like she'll have, I don't even know the position, but you literally just bend and touch the ground, right? No problem, I can do it. In the morning I get up and I bend and I can barely touch my knees. You know what I mean? Because you warm up, over the course of the day, there's been movement. But
Yeah.
I think about that now. And what do I do in the morning? Like on a Wednesday morning, I get up, or Saturday morning, I get up, I eat breakfast, I do my business, and then I go and I jump on the bike. There's no warm up. There's no, and
Right.
think so think how cold and tense your muscles are, and then you just jump on the bike. Yeah, as I said, something's going to give. So
Yeah. So
anyways,
stretch.
yeah, listen to us, listen to the old men.
All right, what
So
else you got?
I don't know, man. Just well, you know what? The other thing is, I was talking to a guy on a ride the other day, and I was telling him that I was like, he's this guy's a Brian, local guy, he's a prolific racer. And I was like, man, I don't know. I can't, like, he's telling me the race, because it's that season, right? That you
Yeah.
mentioned, early bird crits are going on.
Yep.
And now our friend Velo Promo
Yep.
is putting up the race schedule. So Cantua Creek is coming. And I'm like, I can't get motivated to get ready to so for me to get back into the race scene would require, obviously would just require me to start doing intervals again and do that whole thing. And he was like, just put it on the calendar, man. Just write it down, is what he said. Write it down. And so then I talked to another guy who I rode with, and his goal, nothing for you, but it is 500,000 feet of climbing. And I was just a little bit shy the other day, this year, of that. And I thought, that's the plan. That's what you got to do. You just got to write this stuff down, or write it down, or set a goal, do something. And I think that's kind of my problem, is I'm floundering a bit. Like I go and I ride, but with the gym, I don't have a specific purpose.
Yeah, you know,
So,
a lot of guys already have their whole schedule for the year already mapped out.
yeah.
Like I was talking to Remy, Sean Remy, another one of the founding members of the podcast, and he's already got his whole schedule for the whole year.
But what does that mean? Does he have the events that he's doing, or does
Yeah,
it?
his whole race schedule, he's doing mountain road, he'll do some cross. Yeah, he just maps it all out and then just starts, a lot of these things you got to pay for way in advance before
Yeah.
you get in. So, yeah, he spent some money. He's got, yeah, and he's been racing already.
Is he part of that Enjoy?
He's now riding for, I think, Michael David Winery.
Oh,
Yeah.
because those
So
Enjoy guys are like, they're all over the
they're
place.
on it.
Holy,
Yeah. Every weekend. Yeah. They're getting after it.
Who's
Yeah.
that? That's
That's
Murdoch.
our former guest, Vince Murdoch. Yeah, MMA
And
fighter. He's actually got a UFC fight coming up.
oh, he's still going at it.
Yeah. So as when it gets closer and it gets more details, we'll be sure and let everybody know so you can check it out. But
But a couple
Vinny's a great guy, super
of
friendly guy, and he's built something really great there in Sacramento. Yeah. Yep,
yeah.
so.
No, I watch. Yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, that's the thing. I went to do. We were out riding this weekend, And yep. the route was 65. And then we started the route and we're like, okay, anyone at the end, I want to go up the North Gate and do another, I wanted another 10 miles, a couple thousand feet of climbing. And by the time we got back towards, I was like, let's just go home.
Yeah.
But I don't have anything on the calendar. I don't have an event that I was training for. When I was training for the Lost and Found and Belgian Waffle, like I knew I had to do 100. So at least once or twice a month, I would knock out a hundy. And I'm like, whatever, 65 is good enough. So.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, we're not racing. We're not pros. I shouldn't say we're not racing. We're not pros. And you want to keep it fun. And if it's like, oh God, I got to go up to Northgate now, that's not the kind of mindset you want, So pack it in.
Yeah.
I've been a slave to that for years and I'm trying, it's old habits are hard to break, but I don't have any set goals for this year for my cycling. I just want to.
Well, but you said it for the last 2 years though, you said that you want to get faster, which I don't think you need to get faster, but you said you were going to climb less and here you are.
Yeah. Like I said, old
but
habits.
You said you wanted to get faster and you're going to change up and oh well,
yeah, shoulda woulda coulda.
So, Alex is in the house.
Yes, we can't see him though. I think he's working on a setup right now.
How's it going?
Hey, good. All right.
Morning.
Howdy. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, man.
All right.
It's good to meet you guys.
Let me
Dave, I know you guys, you and I had a chance to connect earlier, but it's nice to join you guys face-to-face this morning.
Yeah, good stuff.
Definitely. All right. Let me introduce you, Alex. We are excited to have Alex G from World Bicycle Relief joining us today in this episode. And we're going to get caught up on all the great things that the World Bicycle Relief Organization is doing around the world. So, Alex, thank you for joining
us.
Mike,
you're freezing a bit. Is it me or is it?
Oh, I don't know.
I wasn't catching any freeze, but
yeah.
Where are you joining us from?
I'm calling in from Chicago, so I'm a little bit ahead of you guys. You guys are about 2 hours earlier than I am, and we are looking at a bit of a warm up here in Chicago.
That's a relative term, though. It's been sub zero, hasn't it?
Yeah, hey, we'll take it. It's 39 degrees right now.
Oh,
call that. Yeah, spring's on the way.
Are you a year round cyclist? You get out there and just hammer out even in the freezing cold?
Well, yeah. So I used to say that I was like, I was the tried and true 365 kind of cyclist, and then I joined World Bicycle Relief. I started working out of the SRAM office, and I got to say, I have had to adjust my metrics for what it takes to be that like top level cyclist. We've got guys in there who have studded tires that are out shredding up the ice. Like they don't stop for anything. I love riding year round. I'll ride my fixie in any condition, but I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to the road bike. I put it away once the ice gets on the road and then I won't bring it back out until the winter's gone. So
yeah.
How about you? Yeah, ice can be dangerous. I've had a couple of black ice incidents where, you're just cruising along and all of a sudden you're down. You're not even turning a corner or anything. The bike will just slip right out from underneath you.
Yep. I have an ability somehow to crash the bike even when there's not ice on the ground. So I have taken some caution this winter for sure. But no, it is a blessing to be surrounded by cyclists who are willing to ride in any condition, because there's always people going out for a ride. I mean, we had guys go out for a ride on Saturday and it's 36 degrees and it's a blustering wind and I'm just like, no man, what are you doing? I used to think I was hard when it came to cycling, and then I met these guys and changed my perspective a bit.
Sure. I do have to ask though, with nowadays with Zwift, why would anyone subject themselves to that?
That's what I'm saying. Some people live for it. And I get it. Like, I've been there. I understand that love of being on the bike when nobody else wants to be out there. Like, that feeling is unique.
Yeah. Right. But
These guys take it to another degree. You know, right? I did a ride with a few of these SRAMis last spring. We did a gravel ride out in Morris, Illinois. And I think the conditions on the course by the time we got out there was 37 degrees. It was freezing rain. And we had a headwind at about 30 miles an hour for 80% of the course, right? And like, I'm sitting there on my bike, like, when are we turning around? Like, when are we just going to call it? And these guys are like, no, we're going to finish. So, you know, it's just a different wire. It's a different wire for sure. Yeah. But, you know, it kind of harkens back to, not to be cliche, but when I started working at World Bicycle Relief, I changed a lot of the definitions for like what cycling means and what that means of transportation can really be for someone, right? And the conditions under which you're willing to ride, they expand. I'll tell you, they expand when that's your primary mode of transportation, or when you've got to get from point A to point B and your two options are ride a bike or walk, right? A lot of the times the bike still takes the cake. So I've had quite a few moments like that of reflection and thinking back to like how many times the bike has been a useful tool for me throughout my life, growing up in a really metropolitan urban scenario in Chicago, where I had access to a dozen different transportation options any given day, right? And then even in undergrad, when I went to a smaller town in kind of rural Ohio, there were still at least half a dozen options at my disposal at all points in my education there, right? There's public transportation systems there that are rival or put to shame some of, you know, metropolitan areas in the US, right? Like major cities that don't have bus and train systems as complex as what we had in small towns. So a lot of reckoning, I would say, with how impactful the bike was for me growing up, but then now recognizing what it can do for someone who truly needs mobilization, right? And is otherwise kind of left to their own devices. So I hate to drag us right into it right away, but
it is a great
time thinking and talking about this.
It is a great segue, and I mean, I second that emotion, right? I live in Danville and was working in a bike shop in Livermore, so where Mike is right now, and it's 16 miles from my house. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, or post that, I was substitute teaching in some of the local schools. We only have one car. So you wake up and it's pouring rain and you're like, I got to get to work. And suddenly it changes everything. If there was a car in the driveway, believe me, or if it was even an option, I would have said to my wife, hey, drop me off. Not an option. Right. Yeah. So it was my transportation. And so, okay, I'm getting wet today, you know, or I'm going to be cold. Yeah. Or I got to pack a set of clothes, right?
Right, because the option of not going to work or not going to school or to deliver goods to the market, right? That's usually not an option at all.
Yeah, not an option. Right. Not if you want to get paid today.
Right, so, exactly. Livelihoods depend on that. So, I do think that truly can be one of the most relatable connection points for anyone, whether you ride a bicycle or not. And World Bicycle Relief, the work that we're aiming to do, right, is just think about a time, the last time you had to get from point A to point B and your options became limited, right? You just laid out a great example, Dave, but what would you do? What would you do if your car broke down or if your bike lost a tire or, you know, all of these options that we kind of take for granted, perhaps. I don't want to speak for anyone else. I know I do from time to time, that if they weren't there, what would your solution be, right? And a lot of the times when you ask folks that question, they can list off 3, 4, 5 alternative options where they just say, oh, well, you know, I'd call a Lyft, or I'd hop on a bike, or there's an electric scooter that I can borrow from, you know, so-and-so down the street or whatever. In many, many of the communities that World Bicycle Relief aims to serve, there's one option, right? There's
one option in your walk. Let's back up then. Because there's probably, part of the goal here is at least educate people more on, we're boring Mikey, obviously he just got up and left.
It's all right.
my heater stopped working. So I gotta figure that out.
His what? His heater?
Yeah.
Heater. Yeah.
Yeah. He's in his garage, man. It's freezing in there. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those yeah. things that, there we go, we're back to those things that we take for granted. And poor Mike yep. is in his
yeah from but, the from the high-end podcasting studio that I've custom made.
Hey man, you've got a podcasting studio. I'd say that's a win.
Slash garage.
Heck yeah.
So
but let's talk
good
let's,
point, Dave. Yeah, we
tell
can
us
back
about
it up
no because I want to you know, hopefully educate some people on the great work that you're doing. So talk to us about the mission of World Bicycle Relief and then how it, I mean, cause there's a, well, one of the things that I obviously I love cycling, but I'm curious as to, you know, there's a lot of ways I think to serve some of the communities that you are serving mm-hmm. and somehow in the mission of this is sort of built around the bike. So I'd love to hear how that came about and then and we'll go from
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we'll back it up just a little bit. So I'll give you guys a bit of the spiel. So World Bicycle Relief, we've been an organization, again, like you said, focused on bicycle mobility. And we've been around for about 18 years now. Our first distribution of bicycles was in response to a natural disaster in 2004, an Indian Ocean tsunami that affected Sri Lanka. And we can get into that a little bit in a moment. Just really briefly. So World Bicycle Relief, we primarily, our program centered around distributing a 50-pound steel frame bicycle called the Buffalo Bicycle. And this thing is a hefty, heavy duty, rugged beast of mobility. Like it can really hold up. I mean, 50 pounds of steel. So it holds somebody riding it. It's got a back rack rated for 100 kilos, which is about 220 pounds. But we've seen people far exceed that. That's just the rating. Like people will load the rack up with anything from fresh dairy to livestock to they might have another friend riding back there, turn it into a taxi or an ambulance, right? We've seen people modify the back rack and load it up with rebar and all sorts of stuff. But this bicycle, this tool is primarily distributed
through reason a lot, eh?
Bicycle, through what's that? I'm sorry.
Is it me freezing or is you? I'm sorry.
Oh, that's you,
Dave. It
seems
like you're breaking up a little bit.
It's got to be you. I'm not having a problem at all.
Oh, okay. All right.
No worries.
Sorry about
that.
Sorry about the intro.
No, you're good. So we centered our programs around this really heavy duty bicycle known as the Buffalo Bicycle. We're distributing it primarily to healthcare workers, students, and entrepreneurs. So that could be farmers, that can be anyone who's seeking economic opportunity that needs mobilization, right? But those are our three key impact areas: healthcare, education, and economic opportunity. But we put a specific focus as well on women's empowerment and our responsibility, our duty, if you will, to address some inequity that exists in many of the communities that we serve, where young girls, young women are facing different sets of challenges, oftentimes more challenges to access those same levers of opportunity, whether it be education or healthcare or economic opportunity. So we, through our programs, distribute on average an aggregate of 70% of our program bicycles to young women and girls, right? And that's not to exclude the young men and boys who also need to be mobilized, right? That's simply, like I said, to address some inequity that exists within the communities where we're serving. And briefly, before I continue, let me talk about that. We have active programs in 6 countries as of right now in 2024. Kenya, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Uganda. Those are our 5 African countries as of right now. And then we have a presence as well in Colombia, in Latin America.
Colombia, right?
Colombia, yeah, that's right. So we started our operation in Colombia around 2019. Our first distribution was actually in February of 2020, somewhat ill-fated timing to send staff down to another country and try to film. And then all of a sudden, a week later, we were sending them right back.
They didn't get stuck down there, right?
Oh, no, they almost did. But they made it back. And we're really grateful. We've got incredible teams in all of the countries where we work. So this isn't a bunch of folks sitting in Chicago or sitting in New York, you know, flying out to try and do this work. We've got folks within the program countries where we work who are oftentimes from local communities who are working within our staff. So like 40-50% of our global staff within our program.
Let me just rewind for 1 second, though. Yeah. Let me just rewind for 1 second. You said Sri Lanka in 2004, there was a natural disaster.
Yep.
Right.
There was a tsunami in the Indian Ocean. Yep.
Okay. So was World Bicycle Relief an organization? And then this happened and we said, okay, let's get bikes there. Or this happened and we said, okay, how can we help? So
exactly. You nailed it. So the latter is more true to what happened. Our founders, this predates my time at World Bicycle Relief, but our founders recognized the need for rugged mobility within response to this Indian Ocean tsunami. So in Sri Lanka, after the tsunami in 2004, two-axled vehicles, emergency first responder vehicles, were not able to get through much of the rubble, much of the kind of destruction that followed in the earthquake. And what they needed, what they truly needed for first responders was something with two wheels, a bicycle,
okay, to get
them through, but not just any bicycle, right? Like I couldn't send them out on my fixed gear bike or it would break down. It would fall apart instantly, right? So there was this kind of light bulb moment for our founders that, hey, we can use our resources and our leverage within the bicycle industry. Now these founders are tied in directly with SRAM. Well, we share a founder with SRAM, FK Day.
Okay.
And Leah Misbach Day are the founders of World Bicycle Relief. FK and his brother Stan are two of the founders of SRAM, which for those of you who love bikes, many of you are probably riding their drivetrain or some other component of theirs right now.
Shout out to SRAM then.
Out to SRAM. They are one of our greatest partners. Probably wouldn't be where we are today without them, if for no other reason than our product development team. Our new product development team is comprised mainly of engineers who have either been attracted by or came directly from SRAM. So we were really lucky to get to work with them and have them spearheading the innovation behind the Buffalo Bicycle. But back to Sri Lanka, just to rewind a little bit, there was an initial influx of bicycles in response to that Indian Ocean tsunami. Again, just for first responders, for people who were there going through the rubble, trying to provide medical care following the tsunami. In about 2000, I'd say late 2006, early 2007, I think there was a recognition within the group that led that distribution that, hey, there's a need for this mobility far beyond in response to disaster, right? Like there's a need for, you know, for lack of a better term, rural mobility solutions in countries across the globe, right? Where people who are otherwise on foot are seeking opportunity, whether it be educational, whether it be healthcare, whether it be economic opportunity, and they can't get there. And the solutions that exist currently, the bikes that exist currently, you know, anyone who's tried to go into microfinancing, things like that, like the solutions have not yet been fit to this problem, right? And we have what we think to be, and I'm speaking of course now for them, a solution that we've now been able to prove works to solve rural mobility, right? For those who are on foot. And we're really proud to say that after 18 years, part of the work that we've done is to really carefully document and measure the viability of these programs and the success of the bicycle. The success of the individuals who are receiving the bicycle is also really a key. So part of our program staff is a monitoring and evaluation team that spends endless amounts of time understanding from a first person perspective from the end user of the bicycle, what we can do better, what can change about the programs to better serve the needs of them and their community, and what's going well, right? Like, what do we like about the bicycle? And that's everything from testing new product, right? When there's a new part for the Buffalo, we've got people out there testing it, giving user feedback. It's how's the program working, right? There's endless amounts of hours of interview footage between our monitoring and evaluation team and first person bike riders who are giving us feedback on, well, yes, it's wonderful that we have this bicycle, but it's possible that maybe if we did it this way, it would serve this purpose. You know what I mean? Who yeah. better to tell us how these resources are best used than those who need them, right? And that kind of ties into the overall philosophy here. I can talk on for hours though. So
I don't want to cut you off, but I do. What I want to do is sort of paint a picture for anyone that's listening now. It's been a while, right? But I've been to South Africa. And matter of fact, I went to a conference. It was actually kind of embarrassing. We went to a conference in a resort out, and to get there, we had to go through the Zulu Nation, right? Mm. So anyone that doesn't, if everyone just look up Shaka Zulu, right? One of the most fiercest warriors ever, right? And we're driving, the guy that picked me up, we're driving through this place in his BMW, but literally are going through this long stretch, this Zulu Nation, where literally guys were just sitting there doing nothing while the women were sweeping up around their mud huts. Okay. And the children were actually coming from school, but they were walking. Right. So, my point of that, it's been a while. I don't know how much has evolved. Right. But like my reference to the guys sitting there just sitting there doing nothing was that their job in this society was to hunt and to defend. And that was their job. And since they weren't defending anything now, they really didn't have much to do. And I don't mean to laugh about it, but my point is we also passed the women washing the clothes in the river. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I bring this up, so maybe you could paint a picture of where the five areas or six areas that you're doing, because I think it's hard for me and some of our listeners to understand that there are literally people that have to walk miles, or there are people that have, you know, they to get to school, they got to walk miles and miles and miles, right? Or absolutely. To do anything. Absolutely. I think that's something that maybe you could sort of describe.
That's a great segue. I personally think the best way for me to frame this conversation or this piece of the puzzle is through education, right? I think that's the most relatable and the most attainable. We've seen, and this is of course examples, right? Everybody's got a different story. Everybody's got a different walk to school, right? That's a very real way to put it. There are kids that are in the communities that we're serving. These are the people that we're out there for, who are walking 2.5 hours to get to school, right?
Two and a half hours.
And 11 kilometers.
Yeah.
To get from home to school. And then they do that walk to get back, right? And a lot of the times, depending on the kid and depending on their family, especially if they're a young woman, if they're a girl, they may be expected to go out and fetch water before they get to school. They may be expected to start the fire before they go to school. Like, there may be a list of things that they're responsible for before that walk, before that 2.5 hour walk. Then you're expected to show up to school at 8 a.m. or 8:30 or whenever they start, right? Fresh faced, participate, learn stuff, right? Come home, do your homework, finish your chores for the day, eat, rinse, repeat, do the same thing tomorrow, right?
Right.
And
right.
If you live in a community or if you live in a home where your time is dictated by the rising and the setting of the sun, your productivity after the hours of sunset is extremely diminished, right? So your ability to get homework done or to accomplish these chores is in some cases non-existent.
Right.
So you are trapped, you are confined by the sun, you're racing the sun, which is a phrase that we use sometimes, right? And if your race against the sun involves 4 hours of walking, can you imagine the frustration that may build up in an individual after a year of that, right?
Yeah.
The likelihood that they're going to want to continue to do that, no matter who they are, for years on end, to go to high school and then to pursue more education, right? Like, the challenges of that are something that I myself have never had to reckon with, right? Let's just put it that way, right? I yeah. always had somebody either waking me up, school bus picking me up to take school, or I took the CTA, Chicago Transit Authority, right? Like all of these options that I had that, yeah, sure, I got tired, but I don't think I ever really faced down. But it's the end of the day, I have a 2.5 hour walk and my day's not done yet when I get there.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like that, I'm imagining that as a 9-year-old is just surreal. So, yep. and the truth of the matter is, the unfortunate truth of the matter is we don't have enough Buffalo bicycles or any bicycles for that matter for every student, right? At the end of the day, there are plenty of people around the world in the communities that we serve and outside that don't have access to these Buffalo bicycles or to any bicycle transportation, right? We love the Buffalo. We think it is the best tool for this purpose and for people who are in these scenarios where they're walking in rural conditions where the roads aren't paved and oftentimes there's a lot of dust or mud. We believe that this bike is the best tool for them, but we believe that everyone deserves to be mobilized, whether it be on a Buffalo or not, right? Fact of the matter is we just don't have that many. And so we rely heavily on what we call bicycle supervisory committees, which essentially, just for the listener, is a group of invested stakeholders in a community who are going to decide how best to use the resources we have available. So if, for example, we're distributing a group of bikes to a school, say we've got 100 bicycles for a school, that bicycle supervisory committee may be comprised of the headmaster and maybe a few teachers, some parents, invested local stakeholders. There's people who know the students, who know where the bikes need to go, and who are then going to be responsible for where, for like divvying them up and making sure that they're being used and all of that sort of stuff. It's not for World Bicycle Relief as an entity to come in and say, you get a bike, you don't, you qualify, you don't. We have no idea, right? We have a needs assessment that we do oftentimes to try to assess the impact that the provision of bicycles will have in a community. But it doesn't go too much further beyond that because, again, we subscribe to the belief that a community knows how to mobilize itself. We're here to provide this tool, this program that we believe and we've proven works really, really well. And the bikes themselves are extremely sustained. They're super heavy duty, and I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about that and our mechanics training program that keeps Buffalo bicycles really viable. But I want to finish setting the stage, like you said, Dave, for the listener who may be unfamiliar with what some of these communities look like. A lot of people are living in really rural settings, right? And when I mean that, what I mean by that is the roads are often unpaved, dirt roads, winding off and into what we would call the countryside, right? Here in the US, right? It's often wilderness areas are directly next to the communities where they're living, right? This isn't necessarily, you're not seeing a lot of concrete, right? That's not to say that there aren't homes and school buildings and hospitals and things like that, but they look a little different. In a lot of the communities that we serve, they look a little different than the hospitals and the schools that I'm used to seeing growing up here in the US. But a lot of folks on foot, a lot of bicycles now. And we're really happy to say that in so many of the communities that we're proud to serve, we see a lot of these bicycles. We see a lot of the infrastructure that goes along with them, even despite the fact that there aren't roads and there aren't, you know, your street lamps and your telltale signs of metropolitan civilization. But that, if you will, kind of describes the communities that I've been exposed to. Now, again, I got to remind everyone and myself, like, we serve communities around the world. We've got hundreds of thousands of people whose lives have been impacted, touched by the Buffalo bicycle. Their stories are all really different. So it's impossible for me to try and sit here and capture all of their experiences in one description. But it all comes down to people are trying to get places and we are trying to help them get there, right? That's the simple truth.
But I think I think you're right. You know better than anyone that it varies. But I mean, I think you just with one brush stroke just painted the picture 2.5 fucking hours, right? Mm-hmm. Excuse my language, but
no, you're fine.
You know, I told you about the 16 miles to the bike shop, and it's that's going to take me less than an hour to ride home. And there were just some nights when I'm like, called my wife. I said, what do you mean you can't pick me up? She's like, oh, I'm working late. And I'm like, you know, cold and raining and I got to ride an hour.
Oh, poor Dave has to ride his bike.
I know. And this is what I'm saying. I'm embarrassed to say this after hearing that story.
And by the way,
I've got a music and I'm listening to a podcast. So I have something to pass the time. Imagine.
Well, I've got great news. I've got good news. It's not all bad.
Okay.
The flip side of that 2.5 hour walk is that with a bicycle, that walk becomes 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That time comes back. So, yeah. I'll share with you guys when we're done, and I'll encourage anybody who's listening to go and check us out on YouTube, go check us out on Vimeo. The World Bicycle Relief page on both of those platforms is just full of really rich storytelling that does far more justice to the Buffalo and to the programs and to the impact that the bicycle can have than me sitting here could ever do. Storytelling from our end users.
We focus a little bit on students, but it's not just kids getting to school, right? These are entrepreneurs. They're
That's right. Healthcare workers are another really important area of impact for World Bicycle Relief. We spend a lot of time serving community health workers who are delivering last mile health education to their communities, to young mothers. It's in many cases, yes, they're delivering medicines, but also just that educational healthcare component, right? Whether it be, this is what I witnessed over the summer. I witnessed a health clinic for young mothers who had infants 2 and younger. And it was a whole clinic for people throughout multiple communities to come together, learn about what sort of measurements to take, best feeding practices, tips and tricks from nurses, right? Like it was just this very hands-on educational event where you could tell that was the primary purpose. And yeah, they were taking measurements. Yeah, there were a few stations, right? Where there seemed to be medical stations. I'm losing my words here, but the core of it all was really seriously education was, okay, you've just had a baby in the last 6 months. Here's the best way to take care of it. Here's the best way to feed it. Don't overfeed it, right? Here's how you're going to cook. This is the type of food you should be cooking. And they did a demonstration right at this event, live event. And in order to get there, we rode Buffalo bicycles. That was the other piece of it, was the health workers who went out to this clinic, the ride from the main health center to this, this young mother's clinic was about 30, 35 minutes. And I can't imagine how long it would have taken if we had been on foot. So that was just right. A quick real world example. If you guys will just excuse me for a minute, I have a yowling pity that needs to go outside.
Okay. Yep. We'll take a break.
And now we're
sweet.
I do want to.
All right.
Thank
and
Alex.
We're back.
So,
we're back.
I do want to thank you, Alex. Mike, this whole podcasting is kind of a learning thing for us. We get better. And, instead of us sitting here squirming in our chairs because we have to pee or something, right? We should just say, and now a word from our sponsor.
Right. And it goes seamlessly into transition.
Exactly.
If you're listening, it's no difference to you.
We'll be back in a moment. And then we can go right in. Thank you, Alex. This has been good. I'm glad you have a dog.
I'm glad it worked out that way. right on.
Where were we?
We were in the middle of talking about the bicycle, and I know we were talking about our programs a little bit. So I wanted to finish setting the stage for what we started to see with the Buffalo bicycle when we started distributing it and what led us to kind of push that program further.
Okay. Is Buffalo Bicycle, is this part of SRAM or is it another company or is it you guys?
That is a great question. But World Bicycle Relief is the nonprofit, pardon me. We're the nonprofit. We're 501c3 in the US and we have an entity in 6 countries. Actually, we've got a fundraising arm, if you will, in the US, in Canada, in Europe, as well as in Switzerland, Australia, and the UK. So those 6 entities make up the fundraising arm, if you will, of World Bicycle Relief. in addition to that, I mentioned a little bit earlier, we have our program teams in all six of the countries where our WBR programs are active. So five in Africa and Colombia as well. So we have staff in those six countries, and then we've got people all over the place. There are people who are in neither a fundraising country nor a program country. We've got folks in South Africa. We've got folks just scattered, right? We're a really spread out team. And then I would be remiss if I left out our product development team. They're across multiple time zones as well. We've got some of them here in the US, some in Germany, a lot of folks in Taiwan and in China, who work really hard with our product development team to make the Buffalo what it is. The Buffalo is primarily the name of the bicycle, right? I want to really reinforce that. But Buffalo Bicycles Limited is a subsidiary of World Bicycle Relief.
Okay.
And through that subsidiary, we're able to, it's our social enterprise. So we're a nonprofit social enterprise that incorporates this limited subsidiary to work outside of where our programs currently exist. So what that means is an interested third party NGO, for example, can come to World Bicycle Relief and say, we have a program, we have a group of healthcare workers, for example, in Tanzania, where they would greatly benefit from the provision of these bicycles, right? And World Bicycle Relief doesn't have programs in Tanzania, nor do we have the infrastructure or any of what it would take to run our programs and distribute Buffalo Bicycles in Tanzania. With the limited subsidiary, we're able to say, okay, well, we can sell you wholesale those bicycles for your programs, and you can take them and use them where you need them, right? This tool, this Buffalo Bicycle, we've been able to show with data is really effective at what it does, and it holds up. And if you provide spare parts and if you train mechanics locally, they last for a long, long time. So other NGOs, other organizations, even other individuals are drawn to that. They want the Buffalo Bicycle, right? And we subscribe to the belief that you shouldn't necessarily need to qualify for WBR programs to have access to it. So just the same as other NGOs can come and use the Buffalo for their programs, for their needs, an individual can as well. He can access Buffalo Bicycles through a Buffalo retail shop. So the same source for spare parts becomes a source for new bicycles as well.
Right.
And we've seen, I want to make sure this is really clear. World Bicycle Relief is not selling bicycles, right? We've got a limited subsidiary that makes those bicycle sales possible as well, okay, right? In addition to the work that World Bicycle Relief does to raise money, raise awareness, and then provide bikes and the programming that goes along with them in the communities that we've assessed have that need. So the subsidiary in no way takes away from the mission, the object that World Bicycle Relief has set out to accomplish. But in my opinion, it adds to the supply chain of the Buffalo Bicycle, and it makes this tool exponentially more accessible than it ever would have been before.
I hope I'm not preempting, because at the end, we're going to, you know, give you an opportunity to say, if you want to help out, do this, you know, you can go here. We'll give you that opportunity. But
I've got that.
But my first introduction, I didn't know what World Bicycle Relief was. And I don't know if it was World Bicycle Relief or it was in the SRAM booth, but I actually went to, when I owned a bike shop, we went to Interbike. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that I opened the shop in 2014. So it probably was 2014. Mm-hmm. And I remember at that point I was still a swag hound, right? So I'm like, I got to get free socks. I got to get a t-shirt. I got to get this. And I actually have still in a red shirt that says 100,000, right? And I remember to get that shirt, all I really needed to do was donate at that time. I think it was $100 that said that will build a Buffalo bike. A while back, but now I'm looking like $100 and you've got this bike that's indestructible, which is amazing.
Yep.
And
I'm proud to say we're not that far off. Costs of parts and the bike itself have changed, of course, with time. But we're looking at about $165 US out the door. You want to buy a Buffalo bicycle, you want to support somebody with the provision of one of these bikes, it costs about $165 to do that.
Right. Today. And that's,
Paint the picture, when that shirt came out, it sounds like you had there was a number with 100,000 or so bikes. We are really proud to say that just recently we passed 779,000 Buffalo bicycles.
Yeah, that's, I saw that on the website this morning.
Yes, sir.
Incredible. So
we're cooking with gas. We've got a goal of a million bicycles by 2025. It's gonna be a push to get there, but we can do it. And we've seen that each bike impacts the lives of not one, not two, not three, four, but five people. Because if that bike's in your family or in your community down the street, right? Oftentimes, due to the fact that it's such a useful tool and they're so durable, the bikes go on to serve the needs, the purposes, and impact the lives of five people on average is what we're seeing. So we're looking at a million bikes, 5 million people empowered or mobilized by 2025. That's the goal. That's where we're headed. And you're correct. We will definitely talk about that later. I'll let anybody who's interested know how they can get involved. If they want to follow up.
It's insight into my personality. I cram for exams in college, right? So if I had been better prepared, I would have brought the t-shirt out just so that, you know, I wasn't bullshitting, but, but that's it. Expand on that a little bit. So it's obviously got to be a very difficult process for whoever has to make this decision, mm-hmm. right? To say, all right, here's the criteria. You got this committee. We're going to give a bike to one person, but you just said that's okay because it doesn't necessarily mean it's just that person. It touches five people because it becomes like a community thing or
a lot of the times. So, and this is again, harkening back to data that's been collected most times by our monitoring and evaluation teams who work tirelessly to understand where the bikes are going, how they're being used, and how we can better serve our constituents, the people, the communities that we serve. Right. The bicycle supervisory committees, I want to touch on that again, because it's a really important piece for me. One of the things that drew me into the organization, honestly, is that it's not up to us to determine who deserves a bicycle, right? Who deserves?
What do you know? You're in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
You're in Chicago.
Have any concept of that? Yeah. And even for our staff in country, right? So we'll take Zambia as an example, right? In a community in Zambia, how is it our role as the organization to know best where the resources are going to be used, right? We can say we've got these metrics, we've got this understanding of XYZ. That's how we accomplish this needs assessment. That tends to be at the community level, right? To understand, okay, what would an influx of bicycles do for this group of health workers and how would that affect their community? Or, you know, how would the same be said for, you know, this particular school? Like, oh, this school is quite remote for, you know, 50% of their students. We've done a needs assessment and now we understand that, okay, 50 to 60% of their students are walking for more than an hour to get there every day. And I'm using this all as an example. But it very well could be a real one. Right. We understand that. And then we say, OK, yes, that makes sense to us. That means an influx of Buffalo bicycles will have at least a determinable impact on this community. We don't necessarily get to the granular level and say this student gets one and this student doesn't. Right. Because like you just said, Dave, how on earth could we know who needs one? Right. The community knows which kids are walking 15 minutes down the road to get to school and which kids are walking 2 hours to get there, right? They understand who needs it and or like whose need is greater. It sounds so strange to quantify it in that way because need is such a heart-wrenching thing in this case. When you're talking about students in school, everybody wants all the kids to have a bike, right? Let's get that out of the way. But knowing that they can't necessarily, right? It's not up to World Bicycle Relief staff to understand or to determine which students are going to have their lives impacted in the greatest way, right? The teachers know that. The students' parents know that. The headmaster of the school may know that. And I we subscribe to that same philosophy, whether it be for students or whether it be for health workers, right? The community health workers, whoever leads that team is going to know which of their staff is walking the greatest, you know, distances or struggling the most to carry things, right? Like, it may be more nuanced than just how much time is being spent or how much distance is being covered. Again, that's not for us to sit here and determine.
Right.
My job, thankfully, is very, very tunnel focused on tell as many people and raise as many dollars as you humanly can to support this work, right? And I feel really blessed that that's the role that I play. I got a lot of respect for our program teams who are quite literally putting boots on the ground to understand how to do this better and do it in the best way.
But expand on those guys that make that decision, because we've talked about kids, we've talked about healthcare, but there's a couple of other, some are for business, some are for, right? Commerce.
Absolutely. Yep. We see a lot of farmers are using these. Buffalo Bicycles, you know, everyone from guys who are selling bread, which means they're going from one place to go pick up the bread from the bakery and then take it to market. Farmers who are carrying livestock or crops, or dairy farmers who are filling up giant jugs of milk, these big metal canisters that hold, I don't know how many gallons, but they're incredibly heavy. We've seen people use them in a number of ways. And I can pull a couple more examples up, but I really do. Anyone who's listening that's interested, please go check
watch
out
the videos.
Some of the storytelling on, because it's does far better justice than I could.
I'm not making light of it, but I'm curious as I'm going to go search out one of the ones that says livestock. I'm assuming
there should be some good photos. I my favorite farmer story is Jackton's story. I think we released that video last year. He just is a wonderful soul. And he does a great job of describing what the bike has done for him and for his business. We do have some really great top line statistics just to paint the picture for the audience really quick. We've seen that the Buffalo Bicycles have led to a 28% decrease in student absenteeism, meaning students who just do not come to school whatsoever. 28% decrease.
That's incredible.
Absenteeism. We've seen that healthcare workers are able to visit 88% more patients, make 88% more patient visits with a bicycle.
Yeah.
Right. That is almost double the productivity that people were having. That's basic math. Everybody clap me on the back. But and then we've seen 23% aggregate income increase for farmers. Right. So that's the money they're taking home. That is the success of their business. We've seen some people who receive their first Buffalo Bicycle as a farmer, as an economic agent, through Buffalo Bicycles or through World Bicycle Relief Programming, And then after receiving that first bicycle, their business starts to improve and they go out and they seek a second bicycle from one of these retail shops. Right. So we've seen that their profits lead to more bikes and bikes lead to more profits. That is just so perfectly captures the need for the social enterprise as well. For me, that somebody who received a bike through our programs in the first place, then decided, yes, this tool has worked for me. Now I'm going to supply either my other staff members or my family or whoever with another bicycle, because it's going to continue to scale and grow our business. That's all the proof in the pudding that I could ask for there.
I have a question for you. So the number 779,000 units, is that those are gifted units, or is that total, including the bike shops that are selling the bikes?
That is a great question. So that is total. That is all bikes everywhere. So there, every year when we're looking over our, you know, bicycle distributions, if you will, there are programmatic bicycles, and then there are Buffalo Bicycles, the kind of the retail operation.
Got it.
And to be honest with you, that's one of the things that caught my eye back in 2017, 2018, when I first met WBR, and I was learning about the social enterprise model. And a little background on me, I grew up here in Chicago. Both my parents are nonprofit professionals. So my dad's a development director. My mom runs a food pantry. So we talk about fundraising a lot. And there was something that really caught my attention about the social enterprise model, because if you look at the distribution of bicycle distributions rather over time, that first chunk of time from 2007, right, when we took the idea from the idea phase to, okay, this is a, we can make this into a solution that meets a need much larger than disaster relief. So from about 2007 to 2000, I'd say end of 2011, early 2012, you can see a pretty linear distribution of bikes going out into communities, right? Every year we were fundraising, every year we were able to put about the same number of bicycles into hands of people who needed them. Then 2012 is when this limited subsidiary social enterprise concept begins to take hold at WBR. And if you look at the distribution of bicycles after that point of time from 2012 to date, it is just the back half of a bell curve. It is completely exponential, right? After that. So what that said to me back in 2018, 2017 was, okay, this approach is different from and almost any other fundraising approach that I've seen before, right? It's not just this, it's not the same message. We're not hitting the same groups and just hoping that somehow we can grow the supporter base enough to scale the solution. This is applying a business mindset to an impact-driven solution, right? Where the end goal is still to serve people. It's not to make money. But how do we make access to this bicycle, to this tool, to these programs as widespread and as exponentially accessible as possible?
Yeah.
So that was a great question. I've never been asked that before. So,
well, thank you. I would say,
Mike, that's our Mike.
The way that you outlined it there with the farmer, for example, you know, mm-hmm. Where he's gifted one bike. And then mm-hmm. he realizes so quickly, like, oh man, I need like six of these things. And, but he can't, you know, there's only so many bikes to be gifted. And so making them available for purchase, for healthcare workers, for, you know, you could see where the communities or the business themselves would invest in the bicycle because, you know, would you say 88% more visitation from a healthcare worker? Right. And right. And then the farmer and the growth of his business that he could see if he had two or three of them, whereas he could only get gifted one, and that was an amazing gift. But yep. there's the opportunity to get another one or even more. I just think it's such a great support to the program itself, because you're trying to changing lives and changing communities, and you're giving people, you know, the most precious resource that any human has is time. And so you're gifting these communities more time to, you know, whatever it is, less time doing the mundane and more time doing what nourishes their soul or their family or whatever, you know. So it's an incredible enterprise, you know, the whole thing, just the gifting and then also the support structure.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you saying that. That was beautifully put. I want to touch on the retail shops a little bit.
I'm curious. I mean, what happens? I mean, as indestructible as this may be, everybody gets a flat, right? Mm-hmm. Or everybody, yep. or a chain breaks or something. So yeah, what happens?
So in the time that we've been distributing those 779,000 bicycles, we've also built 88 retail locations across our program countries. Mm-hmm. So what that means, you just touched on this a little bit, Dave, is it, there are mechanics in those shops who have been trained and know how to fix, repair the Buffalo bicycle, and an access, a pipeline to spare parts through those shops as well. So when you need a tire, when you need a tube, when you need a chain, as durable as they are, someday it will break, because we think these bikes will last for 15 years or more. And that I say that because it's been about 15 years. We have no idea how long they could last. They're still out there. So yeah, it's 50 pounds of steel. I think it's going to hold up. You can replace the seat. You can replace the chain. Everything else should still be there for a long time. Yeah. The the mechanics and the access to spare parts is so crucial to having those bikes stay usable though, right? Like to your point, once it breaks, it just becomes trash. That was kind of the inception here, was that you can't take a geared bicycle out of, you know, an urban environment and like a 7-speed and then take it out and try to rip the roads in rural Kisumu, Kenya, right? It's just not, it's not going to work for you, or it will, but maybe for not long, right? Once it breaks in 30 days, do you have the parts that you need to fix that bike? Do you have anyone around with the tools they need or the know-how on how to fix that bike? Maybe not. Thankfully for Buffalo Bicycle, we've got 3,000, more than 3,000 mechanics who have been trained and employed now fixing and repairing bicycles.
And are these people that have been hired from within the community that you've created another opportunity then? Because
that
now,
was why I wanted to talk about retail shops, because I think two things were really important to me when I first learned about them. I needed some clarification. This is not an opportunity for World Bicycle Relief to swoop in and start owning the means of production to all of this, right? When I look at the retail shops, it really stands out to me that the staff are from the community as well, right? That it is job creation in the truest form. There are people out there who now have their full-time job, and that includes our mechanics. The mechanics who have been trained on the bicycle are crucial to the success of our programs. And we're really proud of that part of our program, but I would hope that we're serving them as well, not only the bicycle rider, but those who are surrounding and what I like to refer to as our bicycle ecosystems, right? Anyone whose life is involved in or touches the Buffalo bicycle, our goal is for their outcomes to be improved, right? So that incorporates the staff in the retail shops. And again, this is, and you just touched on it a little bit, Mike, economic opportunity. This is a little bit of a lever that doesn't get touched on as much when we talk about World Bicycle Relief programming, but it stands out to me for sure that there have been thousands of jobs created, right? And that there are now 88 new retail locations. And I got a chance to see it play out in real time when I was in Zambia this past year. I was having a conversation with a man while we were at that clinic, actually, for young mothers. We were standing there. He was a health worker in his community, and he was explaining to me how he uses the bicycle, a few other things about how long he'd been with the program, et cetera. And I was asking him what sort of challenges they were still encountering. And the first thing he said, of course, was that they needed more bikes. I heard that a lot. And the second thing was that they were having trouble keeping access to spare parts at times when they needed it most, because this clinic that they were working from was really remote. I mean, we were like 60 kilometers from the closest town. And if you don't have a car to get to town and your bike is the broken thing, how are you supposed to get the parts to fix your bike if you can't take your bike? Yeah. So it was one of those things where he was like, we can't get this piece of it figured out. We love the bikes. We really love using them. But when something breaks, it becomes unusable because we don't have access to this retail shop, even though the closest retail shop was 60 kilometers away. It didn't matter. Right. And so I was kind of stumped, honestly. I was standing there and I was thinking, well, I don't know. The best answer I would have is to turn to my counterparts in this country, in our program staff, and say, how do we handle this situation? So that's exactly what I did. I was fortunate enough to be on a trip with our country director in Zambia, Brian, good man, Packer fan. I turned to Brian and I said, how do we solve?
Who are they playing next week, by the way?
Oh, what are we taking shots now? I'm happy you guys won last night.
Yeah.
I was not willing to wake up this morning in a world where Detroit's going to the Super Bowl. That's not why we're here to talk.
It was so close. We'll
leave that for another day. Yeah, it was too close.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, no spite out of the green and gold. but anyway, I asked Brian, I said, please come over here. I got a question for you. I don't know how to solve for this, but I'm sure you've encountered this before. And sure, you know, quick as a whip, he was like, yeah, okay, here's how you solve for this. He kind of pushed me out of the way. He's like, let's go. We're going to do it this way. You're going to buy a community chest worth of parts. Like, you're going to go to everyone who's got a bicycle in your community, every health worker who's using one right now, and you're going to collect 20 quetcha, which is like a dollar. You know what I mean? $2. You're going to go get a dollar from everybody, and you're going to pull it together. You're going to come into the closest retail shop. You're going to buy 5 tubes, 1 chain. He gave him a list of like, these are the key things you want to have on hand, right?
Yep.
Then you're going to bring them back here to the community where everybody can come and access them. And when somebody has a tire that they need replaced, they'll come and they'll buy it from you, right? Now, here's the key. You're going to get these parts from the retail location at like 10% markdown from wholesale pricing. So whatever, or, you know, at wholesale or whatever, I don't understand the pricing model, but you're going to get it at a margin lower than what you would have to pay for it normally, right? And then when someone comes in and buys it from you, you're just going to charge them the normal rate, right? So for this tire, it's going to be $5, right? And they're going to come, they're going to give you their $5. And then over time, your chest will build up and you'll have an increase in that kind of extra reserves pool of cash, right?
Take it, reinvest it, and continue to build up.
But just a community chest of parts, if you will, right? Where you're reallocating the resource that is the retail shop, where you could otherwise just come in and pay $5 for a tube anyway. We're just going to move that locally. And here's how you do it. And here's how you even make money on it so that you can scale it and grow it over time, right? We're going to give it to you at X wholesale discount so that when people come to you, instead of coming into the retail shop, you're going to make a small profit margin over time. And that'll allow for you to build this chest of spare parts for whoever needs it, right?
It's like a satellite service center of sorts. You know,
exactly. But the really important piece of that for me, standing there witnessing this, was like, we don't care if you buy the parts from us. We don't want the margin. Yeah. That's not what we're here for, right? This is about having a pipeline. This is about access to the spare parts, right? And the success of the business is driven by the success of the outcomes for the people in the communities that we serve, right? Yeah. If we make more money, we're giving away more bikes. That's how it goes, right? Then so the margins aren't there for any other reason than to reinvest into the company. And they're very, very slim.
So what is, I want to make sure we cover a lot of stuff in the limited time here. Good. I mean, you don't have to sell me I'm sold on a bike. And now I think you've painted a picture of something that I take for I don't say I take it primarily recreational, but now that I have one car, I use a bike to get to the grocery store. I figured out how to carry 12 packs of Diet Pepsi in a backpack and in my hand. And I, you know, there's Mike shaking his head again, but it's amazing what I can load up on my little fixie and ride to and from, you know, but what is the limiting factor? So obviously you've got Colombia, but a heavy concentration in Africa, but I would have to imagine worldwide, there are these communities that are in similar situations, right? What's the limiting factor from going to somewhere in the US that has a similar situation, or Asia or India or something? I mean,
that's a great question. And it varies across all of the different countries, honestly. Like, the reasons that we're not going into the US right now are different from the reasons why we're not in other Latin American countries, right?
Okay.
And I'll preface this by saying that I sit a little removed from these decisions. So sometimes I kind of just get the summarized version of what we're doing and program changes. But we recently expanded our most recent country expansion was into Uganda. And that was just last year. So we're really excited that we finally have a formalized presence in Uganda. But that took years to accomplish, right? And years of planning and working with the local government and negotiating and establishing a business entity. And I don't know what it takes to incorporate a nonprofit program in that country, right? There's oodles of steps that were taken to get to that point. And the same is true for Colombia, which I mentioned earlier, we started just in 2019. Their seem to be, there seems to be, let me put it this way, a certain runway between identifying need and then agreeing with all of the necessary parties, pardon me, nation, namely like local government, that yes, we're going to come in and do this.
Okay.
The other piece of it, right, if we're looking at the US, for example, is the need. Is the need the same as the need that we're trying to serve? And that's in no way to minimize what people are going through here in the US or in Canada or anywhere when it comes to mobility. I managed our phones for the first like 3 years that I worked here and a lot of our inboxes. And so I would get contacted all the time. And now my colleague is the one who receives it from folks in the US and from people around the world asking, can I please have a bike? I need a bike. You have no idea how much struggle I'm having to get from point A to point B, right? And the need for, let me emphasize this, the need for mobility is great all yeah. over the world, right? In our country and in most others, from what I've seen. The bicycle itself, the bike that we've centered our programs around, wouldn't fit the need of many of the people who are reaching out to us. Like, you know, if someone from Seattle says, hey, I'm so-and-so, I've got a hard time getting around, perhaps I'm experiencing living with a disability, right? There are a number of reasons why my transportation has become more difficult. My mobility is limited.
Right.
A 50-pound steel frame bike might not be the best
solution. Not cutting it, yeah.
That person, right? Or if, you know, if you're reaching from the hills outside of the Rockies, right? Like,
yeah, good luck.
A single speed 50 pin.
Hey, we are on hill, proud to announce that the Buffalo has its first multi-speed drive. We just launched. Everybody should go check it out. You've never seen a bike like this. It has two chains on it. It's incredible. Yeah, absolutely incredible. We've got a new film called Building the Buffalo, where you can go check out. It's 5 minutes. You can check out a little bit about the bike. Focuses very heavily on product development.
Mike works for Giant Bicycles. He's taking notes. He's going to go back to his product team. Two chains.
I love Giant. Giant makes most of the Buffalo. Shout out to Giant.
All right. Yeah.
A lot of what the Buffalo is made in Giant factories.
All right. To our listeners, I didn't know that. So this was not a shameless plug.
The whole bike industry really has come together to show some love to the Buffalo. And we're really proud of the partnerships that are involved in this. I mean, you know, to shout out another company, Trek just has run an awesome campaign for us the last couple of years. We see love from all corners of the bike industry, not just SRAM and Giant. So we're really, really proud of the work, though, that the product development teams at Giant and SRAM have put into the Buffalo, especially this new drivetrain. It took like 4 years to work on. It was super hush-hush because it's all proprietary stuff. One of the lead engineers on the project is the same engineer who brought you all Axis. So anybody who's riding Axis in ETAB, like we have Chris to thank. So she is a genius, and she is on the team for the new drivetrain. Anyway, I could geek out on that stuff all the time.
Well, it's not surprising that the industry is really behind this, because I mean, it speaks to, like, most of us are enthusiasts in the industry. But, you know, the greater good that the bicycle can do, it's like the solution to so many of the world's problems. And like in the U.S., you know, we've got this childhood obesity. We've got, climate change. The freeways and byways are all full and traffic and all these things. And the bicycle here in the U.S. Is a solution for a lot of those things. But to your point, globally, where you go to these countries where they don't have roads and they don't have, just getting basic water is like a big, could be 2.5 hours of somebody's day just to provide water for their family. The scale of need is just a lot different in these impoverished countries and these areas. So, it's not surprising that the bike industry gets behind this, because, you know, it's so cool what you're doing.
and that's exactly my reason for asking, what, you know, I, when something makes sense to me, which mm-hmm. the bicycle does as a mode for what Mike talked about, water, just getting water and bringing it back. It just makes sense. I'm like, just freaking do it. Right. But I understand that there's probably a lot that goes into just how many, like you said, how long it took just to get into Uganda. Right. And now you're going to go someplace else. Right. You just can't drop the bikes in there and say, okay, we've solved the problem. Right.
Exactly. And that really is the key, is we to take World Bicycle Relief into another country is to take the whole program into another country. Right. So that is training mechanics, that is building retail shops so that spare parts are accessible, that is understanding at the community level who are the people, who are the stakeholders that we're going to understand the need to work with to distribute bicycles to schools, right? It is so nuanced in a lot of those cases. And I want to touch on this as well, because there's never been a memo, right, that came down from the top that says, here's why we're never going to expand into the U.S. Because I don't know that decision has been made. We very well might one day. Right, sure. I hope, part of me hopes that we are able to, because I think that there are parts of the United States where the need for the exact same rural mobility tool is there, right? There are people who are in parts of the U.S. that are extremely remote or dealing with little to no infrastructure or facing similar distances that could benefit from the same bicycle or from one of the other Buffalo Bicycle technology iterations, right? We've got a lighter version that's called the Charger. It's not quite 50 pounds. It doesn't carry quite as much on the back. It's still heavy duty, but it's just made a little lighter. There's one that has gearing on it. Those are not all part of our programming bicycles. Like we won't often distribute those bikes to schools, et cetera, but those are available through the subsidiary, through the limited subsidiary. So there's different iterations of the Buffalo. And I think one day there's a chance that we could see it in many more countries. We all want it everywhere. Like right. The whole company would love to see it in every country instantly. But I think in order to accomplish that would require us to set up our entity, our infrastructure, and bring staff or hire people locally in all of those places. Right. And I think that there has been a determined investment, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, but in rural communities outside of the United States, Colombia signifying a look towards Latin America as well, that's where we're putting our focus right now, right? And that one day it'll be possible for us to bring our focus here, because we hear that a lot, where there are people who are like, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done at home. We say, yes, there is, absolutely. But we think the scale of the impact also, and you just touched on this, right? The scale of the impact that a bike can have, the provision of a bike can have, is vastly greater in a lot of different parts of the world.
Okay. I hope I helped you get the message out, because I think you just said it. And that's what I was driving at. It's not from lack of desire on the part of World Bicycle Relief. You just said it. We would love to be everywhere. Right? But it's a process, it's time, and you have to prioritize, as I think you just said, based on the impact. Sure, you could solve a problem in some rural part of the U.S. or out in, you know, the outback of Australia, but you can find areas where you can solve with one bike multiple problems, right?
And a lot of these new, we're able to partner with the country themselves, right? Like the Ministry of Health or the Ministry of Education in some of these countries, where they're going to take this and run with it and say, okay, we believe in this solution. World Bicycle Relief is going to partner with us, with this ministry, to provide the solution to XYZ number of communities within our country, right? And I think Uganda is another really great sign for what's to come for World Bicycle Relief. We had worked with other NGOs through the limited subsidiary, through Buffalo Bicycles, in Uganda before we had presence there as an official entity. So, right, the Red Cross in Uganda had worked with Buffalo Bicycles to provide bikes to healthcare workers who are traveling throughout the country, right, before we began programs there. So there's been that kind of runway as well between the social enterprise and countries and communities and entities that work with that entity. I keep using that word, right? Yeah. That work with that company, and then they become partners of World Bicycle Relief, where World Bicycle Relief expands its program reach to then meet a larger need within those areas. So, my hope is that that will continue to be the case, that we'll see similar things happen in Latin America, especially now that we have a bit of a foothold in Colombia, and our programs in Colombia have been growing and doing really well.
Alex, so I have a question regarding expansion. So you're in these communities where there's a huge need, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you want to be you want to expand, but the resources are not endless, right? So every time you take on a new country, in a sense, it's taking away, but it's limiting what you can do with your existing countries. Because you're now allocating more resources. There's got to be bicycles that are going to go there that could otherwise go to these other communities. And I'm sure those other communities still have tons of need. So how does WBR balance the need of the existing communities versus the expansion of trying to become, you know, more relevant globally?
Absolutely. And that's
his job. He's got to get more people to donate.
Yeah. Well, it is an ebb and flow, right? I have to give credit where credit's due, right? Those decisions don't lie with me, thankfully. Yeah. It would be really hard for me to prioritize.
I can imagine it's got to be a really tough thing.
Wrenching at times.
Which is one of the reasons we're really proud of the fact that over the last 5 years, we've been able to bring WBR programs into two new countries, right? Like, that to me is incredible. And not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but two new countries, and we didn't lose a presence anywhere, right? Like, we haven't seen the success of Zambia diminish because we now have a presence in Uganda.
Okay. Right?
And so I think that speaks to the intelligence, the hard work of our program staff, of all of our leadership in that realm of the company, of the organization, who looked at what is the need for WBR funded bikes throughout the end of the year. We're going to meet that with fundraising and with program, right? We've gotten some investment wonderfully from USAID. We've had some awesome success at the foundation level with we did an IPA study a few years back that brought in some interested parties. So we've had some incredible partnership that has made all of this possible. But, you know, none of our programmatic aspirations have stopped while we've been moving into new areas and new communities, right? I think it represents multiple teams working at different angles, right? We've got our program staff who work nonstop in the countries where we live and work to serve the communities that we are invested in. And then we've got other groups of our staff who are working at the program level, who are working at the institutional level, who are meeting with members of Congress to talk about why this deserves funding, grant funding, et cetera. And that has helped us grow as well. But again, if you can't tell, some of this stuff is just well beyond my pay grade.
Like, sure.
I think that it is an incredibly difficult task to balance our desire to have bikes in every community that needs them, in the hands of every person that needs them, and the, you know, bottom line of we have X amount of dollars and we can only work in so many places at once.
Right.
But big shout out to the program staff for balancing those priorities and managing to really care about the sustainability of the programs themselves as well. That's something that shined through to me that I want to highlight. I'm not going to take this time to disparage anything. There are a lot of ways that this could have gone where the focus gets placed on putting out as many bikes as possible, and that's it, right? And we're just going to churn out bikes and see how many we can crank that number up to be, right? Yeah. That's not what's happening. Right. I'm really proud to say that there's intention at every single step of the process around sustainability and making sure that the outcome for the individual is improved, right? If that's a student, we want their education outcome to be improved, but it's so much more than that. We want their whole life to be improved, right? How do you measure that? It's really hard. We need to understand intimately right? What's going on in their life? We want to be involved in their community, and it's not as direct, right? A lot of times we're going through those bicycle supervisory committees, trusted, invested stakeholders in the community who can give real world, real time feedback on the programs. But if we lost that, and if we lost sight of why we're there, right, we would just be a bike company, right? Yeah. And that's not what we're doing. So anyway, I could keep talking about that for hours.
I think we're at a point where we should think about wrapping. And Mike, unless you have any more questions, yeah. But I let's get word out. So how do anyone that's going to listen to this podcast, where do they get more information? How do they donate? What do you know? Lay that on us, because
please
look, I'm unemployed right now, but I'm going to gas my wife for $165, right? It just makes, I hope, but anyways, it's such a simple thing, you know, to have such a big impact. So go on, tell us where they find you, where they can learn more. Tell us about the YouTube channels, where they can donate.
I appreciate that, Dave. And I want to make it clear for everyone who's listening, you know, I haven't always been at a place where I can donate a whole bike throughout the year. You know, it changes. Sometimes I donate a wheel set, which you can do for $25, or you can pay to, you know, supply the tools for and the training for a mechanic in our mechanics training program for about $50, right? So those are just a few different levels of what your money is going towards, right? You can go to support all of that with any number of donations. You can, no donations too small, and no amount of donations is too large.
Okay.
In order to find out more about us, though, I really would encourage you to go to worldbicyclerelief.org. That's the best place to start. You can find us on YouTube at World Bicycle Relief. We're on Facebook and Instagram if you're into that sort of stuff. Please tag us if you share anything with your bike, put a picture up, tag us, have fun. We have a few events throughout the year that you can get involved in. We have a free global cycling event called Pedal to Empower that we host every year around World Bicycle Day on June 3rd. Okay. It runs for 4 or 5 days. We get it's no fundraising necessary. Everybody just get out and ride. We've had people from over 90 countries come and join us for that holiday. We just get out and celebrate the bikes. We talk a little bit about women's empowerment. It's a great event, and I'll be encouraging Mike and Dave to join us for PTE so you can come try and join their team.
Yeah.
All that stuff to say, I am a resource as well. I work.
It's not in Chicago in the middle of winter, is it? It's not.
No, it's right in June. And that's the beauty of Pedal to Empower is we've managed to spread it out so that we've had community partners all across the globe who are hosting their own rides. So hopefully we'll have something in your area as well. No matter where you're listening from, hopefully we'll have an event going on somewhere in your area. So check in with us before that event. I'm a resource. This is my bread and butter. I spend all of my time working, doing this and talking to people about WBR, getting to know what their interests are around the bike, and answering questions that you have about our programs, the Buffalo Bicycle, what's new, where are we going next? All of that sort of stuff. I'm more than happy to get into another conversation. So anybody who wants to chop it up, please reach out. I'll make sure that these guys have my contact information. And last but not least, if you want to get involved, if you're feeling motivated, but maybe donating's not where you're at right now, please consider becoming a fundraiser. It is one of the easiest things that you can do is to set up a fundraiser and donate your birthday or tell your friends you're going to go out for a ride this Saturday and you want to see who can raise the most money in your community between now and then, right? Like it is as simple as if you're feeling passion for what we do and for providing these bicycles, there are so many other people who will feel the same way. So I encourage anyone who, if this touched your heart, if you feel some type of way about bicycles now that you've had an hour and a half to listen to us, tell your friends. That's the best thing you can do to support us is mention World Bicycle Relief the next time you're having a conversation with your cycling buddies. Bring us up when you're at a Rotary meeting or when you're at the grocery store, like really seriously with anybody. I'm a firm believer that once we get our foot in the door, it's hard not to see how impactful, how powerful these bikes are and how powerful the people who are riding them can be. And that has always been the most useful tool for me. So please tell your friends, if you're interested in WBR, don't hesitate to reach out. My name's Alex. You're more than welcome to come and chat with me. If you're in Chicago, come hang out. We'll see the office. I'll show you Buffalo. We've got a test track in there. You can ride it. It's pretty cool.
Definitely. I joked about Chicago in the winter just because of our earlier part of it, but I'm very interested in the Pedal to Empower. I'm interested in a lot of stuff, but I do run a cycling club, and I think if I could get a little bit of information when that day is coming, I think I will try to muster up a ride around or in these parts. I think I could do it. So I'd love to
see if you can raise some money, Dave. You're in Danville with all them ball players and lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
And we've got some great resources for like how to host a community ride, like all of the digital materials and assets that we've got put together for that event. So I'll make sure I set up some time.
Right to follow on. You
guys. Perfect. Yeah, super. All right, Alex. Well, listen, what you're doing and the mission is such a noble one, and we're behind it 100%. And I've been in the bike business for about 35, maybe more. Geez, I'm old, but a lot of years. And I love it because I do feel like on a small level, nowhere near what WBR, but we change people's lives with bicycles, you know? And what you're doing is probably the pinnacle of that. And so applaud the organization, and and we'll do what we can here on our end at Cycle Jerks to promote it. So thanks so much for everything that you do and for joining us this morning.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you taking some time to host me, and thanks for showing some love to WBR. It's awesome to get in front of you and your audience and talk about bikes all morning. That's been my favorite thing to do for the last 4 years. So thank you both sincerely. I look forward to spending some time with you guys, hopefully in the near future. Maybe I'll set up some time for us to follow up in a month or so. Yeah.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
All right.
If you like what we're doing here at Cycle Jerks Podcast and you would like to support us, please check out our website at cyclejerkspodcast.buzzsprout.com. Hit the subscribe button. We shout out all subscribers, so get on it. Another way you can support the podcast would be by giving us a 5-star review on whatever streaming platform that you're listening on. We appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Cycle Jerks.
Hey, get out of the road, dummy.
Cycle Jerks Podcast.